Welcome to the Lubar Executive Education Podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about making the transition from being a manager to an adaptive team leader to help your organization truly transform. With me today is Dr. Karuna Ramanathan. Karuna is a true master in change leadership and transformation. Over the past three decades, he's been helping senior leaders and organizations through difficult transformations, especially people and culture change. Karuna has worked with global leaders from the Prime Minister's Office in Singapore and the Brunei government, teaches postgraduate programs, and publishes works on leadership. Recently, he was featured as one of the top 10 organization development consultants 2023 by the Asia Business Outlook, and he has also been nominated by the CEO Insights Asia, a business magazine, as one of the top Asian leaders and achievers 2023. Welcome, Karuna. It's great to have you here with me today.
Thank you, Mike. It's a real privilege, and thank you for having me on the show.
You are welcome. To get us started, can you begin by sharing your thoughts about what has fundamentally changed over the last 3 to 5 years when it comes to leaders planning and executing change in their organizations?
Gosh, you know what I think about this every day, and I want to start by saying that, you know, having been schooled, worked on, you know, the academic side of leadership, it's always been about theories and frameworks and foundations and all that stuff. But when you look at organizations, they are in a bit of a predicament these days. And I guess fundamentally what has changed is that most, if not all, organizations are in some kind of change. For most of them, hopefully, it's transformation. And it means that everyone in the organization needs to get into the act of change. And that means everyone in the organization are potentially leaders, because change does not happen naturally. It requires a bit of an internal piece of work that you need to do with yourself as you start to respond to the changing circumstances. So fundamentally, to answer that question, leadership has become a lot more pervasive, and it's no longer just about position, but it's about influence.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the first things we cover in almost all of our executive programs is that leaders are here to create change, and everybody has a part in it, even if you're not in a formal leadership role. As you said, it doesn't happen naturally. One of the things I wanted to follow up a little bit here on, you're talking about using more influence these days as opposed to, I guess, control. And something I've noticed more and more is executives are starting to shed more of that command and control military style of leadership for something that's a little more collaborative. And understanding you have a military background, as you see it, what are the differences and benefits or pitfalls of the military style of leadership versus the newer collaborative or influential style?
I think they're just two systems, and the two systems have their merit and their origins. And that military style actually kind of originated in deep hierarchical order, which is absolutely necessary given the way that we prepare for the unfortunate eventuality of hostility and war. Yes. And you know, on a battlefield, you're not going to be in a position to question and to have meetings and to have collaboration. It's just got to just do it. Now, having said that, there are, of course, and I was speaking to someone like, I think about a year ago, and he was a retired Army general, and I just over lunch said, the Army probably doesn't understand complexity. He just stopped eating and he said, I do not agree with you in the least. And I said, no, the Army is all about complicated and difficulty. And it's all about preset routines and training and a whole lot of that. And it's totally fine. My background is in the Navy, and not to dismiss my Army colleagues and all the good servicemen and women, I would say that you can't plan at sea. Literally, you can try, but you don't draw lines on the water, and you can't define the six varied conditions that define how a ship would behave at sea. So some of us are more tuned to complexity, and some of us are more tuned to order and process, and that's pretty much the lay of the land now. And really, I think that at the end of the day, the military does establish protocols, SOPs, rules quite necessarily, because you just have to train to that. Now, that's not quite the case in organizations. There are some functions in organizations that are pretty rule-based. For example, if you take procurement, if you take the legal aspects of an organization, governance, you take work on the ground, and it's pretty much SOP. But a lot of what the leaders are increasingly finding themselves these days in organizations is they're going to have to deal with increasing difficulty. Now, the problem with that is how much of this can be what you know or what you can find people to actually help you with, and what parts of this are probably what you might not know and you can't definitively find people to help you with. And that kind of gets into that whole leadership redefinition now, because the collaborative style is actually a far better way, and research has repeatedly said this, to gaining multiple perspectives around what we need to probably think about, which we may not know quite individually. And that is a fundamental shift, because it's actually based on the complexity of the operating environment, the complexity of the internal environment. I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff going on there, man.
Thank you for sharing some of your thoughts on that. And I agree, there's definitely a place and time for each style. And the trick is to not overplay a strength. There's parts of organizations that definitely need more of that orderly results, and standard operating procedures will cover that. So a command and control is probably a little more suited. But when you're looking at innovation or other more complex things with people, the collaborative style could be what you're looking for. So looking at what's happening in the world today, what are some of the top issues that are making managers uncomfortable now? And in your opinion, how can leaders best address those, or at least maybe factor in the potential of those challenges if they're out of their direct control?
For a couple of years, even just before the pandemic, there was already a push towards digitalization, e-commerce, leveraging on the internet, kind of e-commerce sales and a whole lot of stuff, right? So a lot of organizations were trying to increasingly kind of tap into it and ride on that bandwagon. And then came the pandemic, and the pandemic threw a lot of things out of whack, and all of us had to deal with that. For the sake of simplicity, I like to say that there were external factors just before the pandemic that were quite pronounced, and we were kind of planning for that change, and there was a lot of that digital stuff that was going on, just to simplify it. And once the pandemic hit us, it was actually, well, to some extent, made more challenging by the internal factors. So now you have a confluence of external and internal factors that are kind of disrupting organizations, and it's quite difficult for managers to deal with it. So the result of that often is unreasonable workloads, there are all these tensions, the squeeze of the middle, the tension between an accelerated pace of transformation, most of it forced, the unreasonable demands around getting work done and deliverables, the worries that managers typically carry around the competence and the resourcing around the work that they're asked to do, the discomfort around working with other people, because a lot of performance management still stays pretty individual and pretty much individual based. And so basically you kind of for people to share away their successes because they feel that it was, so there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on in organizations, and managers are in a pretty precarious place for most organizations. Now, by managers, I mean, and I'm going to be broader here, it's not just designated appointment managers, but anyone who has to manage a project, a team, different sets of work pieces, a little bit out of their comfort zone. So in my work with organizations, we deal with cross-functionalities, working with people you have no control or little control over, and kind of how do you then build an adaptive stance. So the challenge facing managers, Mike, is how do you move from manager to leader? How do you work the work and lead the people? Because you don't lead the work and work the people.
And top leaders now have to really be adept at leading transformations. And to do that, they have to make a transformation themselves from being a manager and being a regular leader to being that adaptive team leader. So how is this accomplished?
Most people got to where they were because they were probably very qualified and clever, or they were very experienced and reliable. I mean, I would split that into, you get top leaders who have been to some very, very good programs, and they've got some very strong qualifications, and organizations of, it's just typically full of them right at the top. And there's no disrespect to them. I mean, they are very bright people, and they conceptualize well. Then you have the other major strand of leaders who have made it there because they were functionally strong. They developed a lot of tacit knowledge and expertise. They are deeply reliable, even though in very narrow functionalities, and organizations consist of that. And so you have these two groups of leaders. And actually, if you look at it from the outside, like I get to, and the privilege I have is being an external consultant, looking at people and culture and work and transformation, you'll find that these two combinations are actually quite inadequate to actually, and the magic word here is execute the change needed, because the real work happens in the middle of the organization, Mike, while strategy starts and pretty much is overstated at the top of the organization. And that's why I think there was a McKinsey survey some years back that said 75% of transformations fail simply because the ideas don't pick up. So you need the middle managers to be able to study the idea into system. And this is really challenging for middle managers because they are overloaded, they are squeezed out, they've got a whole host of issues to deal with both at home and at work. And I just empathize totally with them. And so I've made it my mission to lessen a little bit of that burden, to kind of bringing tools, techniques, and tips out to them quite so quickly. So the challenge facing them is execution, to answer your question in a simple way.
So when they are executing, what are the top things that you're focusing on with the people you work with? And what should leaders in general be focusing on when they're focusing on that execution piece?
I think it's critical for leaders to consider developing two key capabilities. I think majority of middle managers, the first is for a smaller group of middle managers, and this can be actually dovetailed into the talent pipeline and succession planning and all that. You really want to make sure that you build and sustain a capability for change. And this simply means taking those ideas in the strategy and bringing that into the system and helping middle managers to build a thinking methodology around how you bring that alive. I call that change leadership, you know, basically kind of how do you evaluate an idea into your system? And as much as it looks like a brilliant idea and a game, potential game changer, it might not just work because you might not have the capacities, capabilities, and commitments to actually get that done at that point in time. Now, this is a small group. And again, I will go back to, I'll go back to McKinsey, who actually put this out about a year and a half ago to say that, you know, for transformation to succeed, you need about 7% of your workforce to be working on these areas. So if you can extrapolate that, you need a small group of middle managers who are actually picked out to do this. We could use psychometric tests. We could do a whole lot of things. There's so many options. But the bulk of the middle managers have to be prepared for the transformation effects that would come into the system. And that simply means three things. How do you help managers work across the organization, which they're not trained for? I mean, and given that the performance management systems in most organizations are largely individual, I don't share my suites. It's deeply psychological, right? Why would I want to share my work with other people when I'm actually going to get rewarded for it? So again, I think Microsoft went to throwing out the bell curve about a couple of years ago, but they went to great lengths to do that. It's not easy to design a system around team rewards and team competence. For most of us, we default back to individual results. And that kind of sits very well with us because we just strive for individual results. And it's not surprising why middle managers don't share and work across. I mean, let's just cut them some slack. The second is increasingly working with people whom we don't agree with. And the important point here is these are the very same people who might actually hold wisdom, knowledge, information, and data, and all data that would be critical to the kind of difficult work pieces that we are starting to see. So middle managers would need some help to deal with that. How do you address that? How do you read the situation to actually sense make, I'm going to use this word, sense make that whatever you need to do is, well, a little beyond us. It's a little beyond the middle manager. And there needs to be some collaborative stance to this. The third is the more difficult thing to do. And this is obviously, it's not very obvious at the start. Every level of complexity requires probing and learning. And I think middle managers really need to be able to facilitate kind of team learning and the insights and all that consciousness around what we ought to be looking at and how we need to be going forward. And this is harder to do, but I think the first two would get us to the third. And I hope I've answered the question in kind of a long-winded way, you know.
Definitely did. And I agree wholeheartedly with everything you're saying. I really appreciate you bringing up the fact that, you know, reward systems are sometimes misaligned across organizations, and, you know, people are going to do what's in their best interest, right, for their next promotion or their next salary increase. So making sure that those are aligned properly will definitely help. One of the follow-up questions I wanted to ask is about, you talked about, you know, trying to get 7% at least of your organization or your middle managers on board with the change that you're trying to make or the transformation that you're trying to make. How do you actually go about getting that 7% when you are in an organization that is, for lack of a better word, complacent, and they don't really see a huge pressing need to change at the moment?
My work the last couple of years, I'll just say that, you know, my when asked this question, I would just say, get the people who are hungry. And let me define hungry. Hungry simply means you carry an expectation of advancement, promotion, success, achievement. So that directly correlates to talent and talent progression. So if you have someone who's got all that energy, and that energy can actually be kind of zeroed in or kind of channeled into change projects, then the point here is to identify the change projects as the last mile or the middle mile of strategy. And I think most organizations do that quite well, I mean, quite so seriously. And then bring that out to bear and get the senior leaders involved with this change leaders to be able to bring the ideas alive. So you will find people who would step forward. But it's quite paradoxical, because what most organizations tend to do is they try to allocate these difficult change projects to the very people who are responsible for running the organization well. And that actually presents a whole host of problems, because, you know, it's all about what I'm going to be measured for and what I'm going to deliver. And all these airy-fairy ideas can just wait, because I just don't have the time for it. Neither do I have the headspace. I'm totally empathetic with the middle manager. I think that the pain that they're going through is very real. So we're going to have to find some people who are hungry. It's as simple as that, Mike.
Yeah, being in the middle is tough. And, you know, you've got to get those orderly results. You've got to implement change. Not an easy thing. And having a growth mindset, as I like to say, is pretty aligned to what you're saying right now.
Allow me to jump in here, because you just triggered something else. And yes. Let's not assume that every of the middle managers should have a growth mindset.
Yes.
Some of us have just reached a stage in our lives where we just want to go to work, do what's necessary, and go home. In my world, that's perfectly fine. But because of the way that organizations recruit, you know, you place a lot of emphasis on dragging or, you know, kind of building talent. I think this is an excellent opportunity to test your talent. Rather than to go back to the qualifications, these are the real skills that organizations are going to need. So I tell change leaders in the programs that we run, if you are able to successfully execute a project that is based on some transformation strategy, you would actually be in demand, because you are a change leader. You can deal with high degrees of complexity. You can form a change team. You can influence people to do work with the wisdom, knowledge, and the information and the data that they have. So it is probably within your intrinsic motivation to want to do that. But let us not assume that most of the middle manager core would actually be drawn to that, because these are people with a lot of stuff to deal with. Children going to college, elderly parents, there's a whole lot of stuff. So let us just cut people some slack. And I think empathy is a key word here. Let us just hold it back a little. And there's a place for everyone in organizations. If we get to a sense of belonging in organizations, the one rule fits all doesn't sit very well with me, Mike.
Yeah, it doesn't sit well with me either. So thank you so much for bringing that up. And you know, this is where those talent development questions and conversations need to take place, where you're asking people, what is their desire for their future? Some people will say, I want more, I want to grow, and I want to rise to bigger or higher levels in the organization. And other people might just want to help keep the organization running really smoothly. And that's great.
Yeah. So as a organizational development consultant, one of the first things I do and people like me do is we look at the organization from the outside. We look at the desire for transformation. And I must admit, some of the transformative agendas tend to be largely ambitious, largely CEO ambitions.
Yes.
Master vision. I mean, it's exactly what Ronald Heifetz at Harvard said. Your vision is at best your ambition. You know, I mean, so we study that and we make an assessment as to whether the pace of the transformation will actually coincide with the flow. Now, the flow is largely a living systems concept, which actually suggests that do you have enough energy in the middle of the organization to bring alive these ideas? And that actually is quite an important diagnosis, because way too often the vision is far excessive of the current realities or the realities at work. And this is where middle managers become so crucial, because you are never going to lead a transformation from the top. You can frame it, you can build a strategy, you can actually measure it, you can do all those things. But if you're not prepared to add resourcing to your organization, then all that energy needs to come from within, and you're really looking at some middle managers who are going to activate it. And we need to be careful, because the organization, you know, transforming organizations still need to run. And your middle managers are actually key to running the organization. So it's actually very problematic when you look at the plight of the middle manager.
Circling back a little bit onto this concept of influence, when we're talking to our executive programs participants about influence, one of the additional concepts we talk about is using currencies to help influence others and help get maybe that 7% or hopefully more on board with your change. What are some of the most important currencies for leaders to utilize, in your opinion, when they're working to get people on board or to transform their organization?
I get asked this question quite so often in the programs. It might be useful to remember that actually while organizations choose to transform, it's people who decide to change.
Yes.
So when we start with that, then it goes back to a fundamental point that as a leader, if you are intending to actually lead the change, I think the skill in question today is the ability to sense make, which means simply the ability to read situations, to actually assess whether this is possible. Now, way too often, we actually assess it to be whether it's worth doing and whether I'm going to get anything out of it and whether we're going to gain out of it and this is going to hold me up. But is it at all possible? That's a whole sense-making methodology that there are several out there, right? I mean, like you could, depending on who you ask, people would tell you, how do you unpack a situation, an aspiration, to be able to translate that into things that are doable with a certain degree of risk? So that's very teachable. But I think the part that needs to be internalized is, because we are leaders and we go back to the topic of influence, the way to influence is not to wish the other person changes. The way to influence is to change some part of ourselves within tolerable stretches or ranges to be able to bring good effects onto others. And I'll take the analogy of a wall, right? All too often when we see a wall, there are really three options. The first is you try to break it, you have all that power and the might, and you put a lot of effort to build it, push it down. I don't like this wall. I'm going to break it. Or actually, if you had a lot of energy for it, damn it, let me climb it. And so you climb it, and you might get up there, and then you need to decide how to get down, which is another whole set of problems. But that's the I can do it kind of spirit, right? But the other way around it, which is the analogy I try to use in the transformation work that we do and change work that we do, is how about you think of how much of you to change so you can actually get around it? And if you get around it, it means that kind of dropping some parts of us, getting some parts of us a little uncomfortable as we build our relational and relatability to others. So to what extent am I relational to this person? Do I seek to communicate to influence? The whole word here is influence. How do I present myself as a more acceptable option to this person at work professionally so that we can get this going? And that really, to me, is the feel of influence, where you actually put upfront a desire to work with the other person to the extent that the manager shows others that he or she is open to feedback and willing to kind of adjust it. So sense-making and self-awareness are probably quite important skill sets now in the context of transforming organizations for middle managers to become successful change leaders, Mike.
I really like that wall example and understanding that you have to show some vulnerability, and this is all built on shared trust. Everybody needs help. You can't do this by yourself. So I think this is a really powerful concept here. Before we wrap up this episode, what final advice or thoughts would you like to share with our audience?
I boil it all down to the fundamental belief of respect. Most of us can do that because we were generally well brought up for some, you know, we were from young, we were exposed to the concept of respect. It could be either in religion, upbringing, you know, mentoring, nurturing, whatever the case may be, schooling, right? But we understand the fundamental premise of respect, which means it's almost biblical, right? Treat others as you would want to be treated, right? Okay. Now, with respect, it underpins empathy, which is actually a very important leadership practice today. And that empathy requires that we literally, and for myself, I remind myself every week, I need to force myself into the shoes of others. Because the mind immediately simplifies things and we are prone to judgment in a major way. And that presents problems at work. In our personal relationships, I believe we are a little bit more careful because these are important relationships, they are relationships we are invested in. But at work, that investment doesn't seem to be so apparent, and it's quite unreasonable to expect that as well. Now, if we will manage to practice empathy, Mike, we might be seen to be demonstrating some degree of humility, which I think would sit pretty well with people at work, because we all have examples of arrogance and superiorities and power, and you know, and nobody likes that. I mean, you don't like to be treated that way. It makes you feel small. So I would just say respect, empathy, and humility, which are aspirations we should hold in the future.
Couldn't agree more. I think that's a great final message to our audience. Karuna, thank you so much for making time in your schedule to talk with me today and to share your thoughts and advice about change and transformation. If anybody's interested in learning more from you, where should we point them to?
The site is www.krk.sg. That's the website. But you can actually reach me at Karuna, K-A-R-U-N-A, at krk.sg. And I'll be happy to take questions and respond over email. I'll be more than happy to do that, Mike. Always supporting leaders.
Perfect. I love it. I will add that information into our show notes. In closing, I'd like to take a moment and thank our listeners. We wish you the best of luck as you move forward on your leadership journey. Please check back regularly for additional episodes.